I like beer. I want beer. So great. Now we have a Hantverksbilar podcast, and we have hosting Fredrik from Bad Seed Brewing. Welcome, Fredrik.
Thank you, Victor.
Very nice to have you here on the podcast. And we have Johan Zeitig, Johan, here as well.
Yeah, I managed to find my way this one as well.
So
very happy to be here and very excited to hear your story. I have not been in contact with your brewery before, so this will be probably the first encounters for me. But I know, Victor, that you actually met them at the All In Beer Festival here in Gothenburg last year.
Yeah, it's true. And I met Rasmus, who is not with us today. Oh, he's with us, but not in the podcast.
He's with us. He's not dead.
You understand? So I met them and I did try at least one of your stout. And I think it was a cool IPA as well. I did try that. Yep. So it was great. So then we get a good contact, and I describe Hantverksbilar a bit on the podcast. So it would be fun, as you have at least one beer for the moment at Systembolaget and one more coming. So would be nice to pay you some attention for the Swedish audience.
Great.
So great, Fredrik. But you started not with Bad Seed, or you started... how long have you been brewing?
Well, I actually started brewing back when I was a teenager. I worked as a volunteer in a small beer shop in Denmark, or in Aalborg, my hometown. And one of the guys I worked there with, he was also a home brewer. And then because I was so into beer and just crazy about trying everything, and he saw my interest, and he was like, "Don't you want to come home with me and we can brew a beer in my kitchen?" And I was like, "Yeah, that sounds like the most exciting thing ever." And so we did, and I just fell in love with brewing. So I was home brewing for a bit, and then in 2012, when I was 20 years old, I moved to Copenhagen to pursue a brewing career, pretty much, and ended up getting an internship at Nørrebro Bryghus, which have a small pub brewery downtown in Copenhagen. And was lucky enough to be under the guidance of Peter Sonne, who is the brewmaster at Flying Couch.
Okay.
And he's been a brewmaster for a lot of years, and he's a really, really talented guy. And he pretty much taught me how to make beer on a big system. So getting into the basics of the, you know, all the equipment that you're using, obviously that's a very different from brewing at home. That just made me love brewing even more.
So you haven't brewed in like a large ordinary brewery before you came to Copenhagen?
Nope. I may have seen one from the inside, but I never had any experience brewing on something professional before. So that was very eye-opening for me.
So do you have any feeling for why you sort of fell for beer brewing to begin with?
I actually do have a very clear feeling about why, because I've always been a musician back when I had time for that, being in a band where we would make our own music. And it's always been important for me to have sort of a creative outlet and to express myself in some sort of way. And I did that through music. But then when I found out that you could do the same through beer, that can also be a creative output. And instead of listening to it, you could actually drink it.
And drink. That's a combination
exactly.
As well.
Yeah, I do that a lot. So it was very natural for me, especially because I was so I was so involved with beer. I was so passionate about it, and I felt like I had a strong opinions about how beer should taste, just like I had opinions about how music should sound, and that those opinions made me want to create something, pretty much. So beer has sort of become the creative output that music was for me back in the day.
I think we heard that from a couple of brewers before.
Yeah. It feels like a quite common story in the business. There's a lot of people coming from music backgrounds that sort of ends up with being involved in beer brewing in some way or another. And I think it is, as you said, I mean, the feeling to create, the creative side, the feeling to create something or have some sort of imagination inside your head about how things could be presented or pursued or whatever, and then try to actually transform that into some physical shape. It could be through music instruments, it could be through food or beverages or art or whatever, right?
Yeah, exactly. Or building something. But yeah, that just was a match made in heaven for me, that learning to brew and express flavors in beer.
So you said that you have pretty good sort of or strong feelings on how beer should taste or how it should be when you started out. So what was your influences back then? I mean, was Denmark and Copenhagen quite evolved when it came to craft beer back in beginning of 2010,
11, 12? Yeah, I mean, back then, Denmark was maybe the country in Europe that had the fastest moving and most forward-thinking beer scene, maybe with a few exceptions, but especially breweries like Michela. Back then, they were putting out new groundbreaking beers every month, and just like the excitement every time Michela had a new release was crazy. And Amager Bryghus, which are also still operating, was, I mean, they've been in the Red Beer top 100 breweries for 20 years almost, ever since they started. And also Toil and Beer here were some of the big, the ones moving the milestones, if you could say so, in the brewing industry. And there wasn't that much comparable countries in Europe at that time. I mean, the UK had started picking up a bit. Sweden was actually behind Denmark for at least the first maybe 5 years that I was in the beer business. I started in 2009. And then something happened in Sweden and it went nuts. And now you have so many amazing breweries in Sweden. So, Denmark was a really great place to be back in 2009, 2010, when it came to beer. It was such an exciting time.
Yeah. So that you can say that your influences came actually from the craft beer scene in Denmark, not the traditional beer scene, as most people are more familiar with when it comes to Danish beers, like the classic lager ones and the big brands, right?
Also very much from the website Rate Beer, which was, it was what Untappd was. Or what Untappd is, that was Rate Beer like 10 years ago. So I would be, instead of when I was in the gymnasium, I would not be taking part of the class. I'd just be surfing Rate Beer all day and reading about beers and reading reviews and exploring the different lists of the world's best beers and figuring out which ones I was able to trade for or buy somewhere and would spend all my money trading for rare American IPAs and stouts and sours just to try them and share them with my friends. And so a lot of my inspiration came from there as well, trying to seek out beers that you couldn't get in Denmark, and trying to pursue what are the best beers in the world and how do they taste. And obviously when you taste so many beers, at least for me, I would, the beers that I love the most, I would kind of find out what is it about this beer that I love. And also when you have those things, you can kind of see when it's missing from beers. So I was like, in thinking beer, I would have a lot of, or maybe we have this IPA, but if you do like this and this and this, that would actually be a IPA that was more to my liking. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the inspiration or the driver for starting Bad Seed Brewing, is that I felt like I had the beers that I really wanted to drink. I couldn't find them, like the beers in Denmark. Mm. So I'll try to make my own.
Sounds good.
And now I'm going to pour one.
We're going to pour one. Okay. So you can describe this one. This Neue Pilsner.
Yeah. So so this is actually our best selling beer. And it's if I had to pick a favorite of all the beers we make, this would be it. It's a beer that I'm super proud of. And it's a beer that I also feel like it represents Bad Seed very well. So Bad Seed Brewing for me is about reaching back into like brewing tradition and honoring like the true and tested beer styles, but also trying to look forward mm-hmm. with being rooted in tradition. And back when I started, I was Phantom Brewing for 3 years before starting the actual brewery where we're in now. And I was making beers only on kegs and mainly for bars in the Copenhagen area. And at first, people were just drinking IPAs. So that was almost everything I brewed was IPAs. And I had never made a Pilsner before, before opening the actual brewery that we have now. So most of my brewing career up to that had been very hop focused. And what I was trying to do was to bring the focus on like hop aromatics into a Pilsner, but not in this, in like many times when people want to make a hoppy Pilsner, mm-hmm. At least in the craft beer side of things, they would use some Cascade hops or some Citra or like make a modern hopped Pilsner. Mm-hmm. But I was really into trying to honor and showcase the traditional hop varieties from Germany, and started to realize that they actually have a lot of complexity. They have some really great flavors, and if you bring them out more in front and center in a beer, that it can create something very unique. And that's what I did with Neupilsner. So it's a beer, it's a pilsner that is very hop focused. It's actually the beer we make that has the most the highest amount of hops in the kettle. So our double IPAs have less hops in the kettle. yeah. However, with a beer like this, it's German low alpha acid hop variety, so they don't give that much bitterness. So it's not like it's uber bitter. It's like 30, 31 IBUs. So it's high for a Pilsner, but it's not high per se. And then a lot of the hops are used as aroma hops, so very late in the boil and after the boil, to try and really highlight the aromatics of those delicious Hallertau Mittelfrüh and Tettnang hops that we use in this one.
It feels very modern for using only like classic German hops.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of German lager and Pilsner aren't that hoppy. And if they're really hoppy, they're usually more bitter than aromatic. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, it's sort of a new twist on the Pilsner. And the name Neu means new in German. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was actually a pretty random thing that I chose that name for the beer, because I had made the first beer I made, I called Debut Pilsner, and that wasn't exactly the Pilsner that I wanted. It was a bit too bitter, it was a bit too strong. Mm-hmm. And then I had to make a new Pilsner, and I couldn't figure out what should it be called, and I wanted it to be short and recognizable. I just couldn't get any good ideas, and then I thought, well, it it's also just a new Pilsner, and it's a German style Pilsner. So I could just call it Neupilsner. Yeah. And that actually sounds pretty cool. but then it also kind of had this meaning that you could interpret it as also being a new take on a Pilsner.
Yeah.
So it's we call it a very traditional Pilsner because it's only made with German ingredients, the same malts and hops and yeast that you use in Germany to make these beers. But it also has a different profile, flavor profile and aroma profile. So in that sense, it's new. But it's kind of random that it's called Neupilsner, and that just, I think it's a fun story.
Yeah, it really is. But it was, as you said, very, very aromatic and tasteful for only like using those classic ones.
Yep. So it's so this one, is this mainly, do you export this one, or is it mainly available within Denmark at the moment?
It's we've actually never exported. No, yeah, we sent a bit to Italy a few years back before COVID. But otherwise, it's only pretty much been available in Denmark. Yeah. But the thing is, I mean, it's also quite expensive Pilsner. So we in Denmark, it costs like 45 kroner for a can.
Yeah,
that may be like 60 Swedish kroner,
more or less.
If you. So I mean, it's a lot of money for a Pilsner. I'm guessing also in Sweden, you're used to paying
very much,
far less than that in in Systembolaget.
Yeah, we can.
I mean, yeah, 60 kroner would be a lot of money for a Pilsner. Even for craft beer. I mean, craft beer Pilsners within Sweden, you can still get pretty decent ones for
35
maybe,
but
44
can as well.
Yeah. So it's, but I mean, it's always a tough market, especially when you export. I mean, in the end, you put money into the brew, and then you need to extract them out in some way or another. Okay, so unless you have a very high margin on the products, which I don't anticipate you do, then I mean, 60 kroner or 45 Danish kroner or whatever is still like worth of content in the product.
It's not because it's more expensive than many other craft lagers, if you take comparable breweries in Denmark, but it's just a different price level in Denmark for craft beer, because many of the breweries are, I think, smaller than in Sweden, and we don't have Systembolaget. I think Neupilsner for me is one of the beers that reflect what Bad Seed is about in the best way. I mean, you have it's rooted in like tradition. We didn't try to do anything new with this beer. We didn't try and put in some crazy ingredient or dry hop it or like do something weird with it. I kind of took a basis in the traditional way of brewing Pilsner and gave it like my own touch. That I felt like was missing when I was drinking Pilsner.
Yeah.
And we've been making this beer actually for 5 years now. And so back then when it came out, pretty much no one was brewing craft Pilsner or craft lager in Denmark. Like very few breweries were doing that. And brewing good lager has also like been sort of an idealistic mission for me in Denmark, because I love lager and good Pilsner so much that I wanted to kind of see if we can have more people appreciate really good lager. So I was brewing this beer and it was selling very slowly, and I was making it again and again and again. So I mean, it did sell, but it took a long time in the beginning. And now it's like a lot of people have opened their eyes up to that it's actually, there's a lot of experience, a lot of good experiences to be had when you pay the same for a Pilsner that you would an IPA. I mean, you can get as much enjoyment from that.
Yeah.
And more people are realizing that. So that's great.
But do you think it's like easier to transform ordinary old-fashioned lager drinkers with this kind of pilsner or with an IPA?
I mean, it depends. I mean, I think most of the people who buy and really love Neupilsner are people who have had tons of IPAs and tons of stouts and have sort of been around all parts of the beer industry and starting to appreciate the more simple things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most people I talk to, most beer lovers, follow that same route in their journey of being a beer geek. That you have a phase where you just realize that most people start out drinking Pilsner, and that's the only beer they know. And then they find out that there is an IPA or a stout that you can drink, and then they sort of leave drinking Pilsners, and then they just explore IPAs or stouts or like the whole new world that opens up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's at least for me, it took a long time to kind of get back. Trying a good Pilsner was like, wow, this is why have I not been interested at all in this the last 8 years?
Yeah.
And then I just really started loving it and started brewing it shortly after.
I think we discussed that several times on this podcast as well, this journey, as you described. A lot of people go in through that cycle, and we can feel that as well in our journey over years, that it's fun to explore new things and get like a ton of different flavors and tastes. But when you find a well-balanced traditional style that is very well made, it's something different. I mean, it will stand out, and it will you will enjoy it in a very, very different way. You will also appreciate it in a very different way. So that's why I think we discussed several times that it's quite, sometimes you're more interesting to go back to the basic, to try to explore like the traditional beer styles at its best. Because, I mean, that's definitely where you need to go. You need to go with at its best, because that's where it's leverage and accelerate and actually delivering something that is unique and really, really good.
And also I really respect and enjoy the idea of having experience, like being really good at what you do. So for example, we were just in Bamberg, me and the Bad Seed team, and we would go to these small family-run breweries that have been brewing beers for 50, 60, 100, 200 years, and it's not because the beers are crazy in any way. They're actually really mellow, and you could drink one without ever noticing how good a beer it is, because it's just so pleasing and goes down. But when you dive into it and really try to appreciate it, you can sort of feel how well made that product is, and how experience the people producing it are, and I think that has a lot of charm when you can feel that sort of emotion in a beer that is just, it's a product that's rooted in experience and tradition, and just like, yeah, that's very fascinating, I think, and I hope to get there someday where people will have a Neupilsner 30 years from now and think the same.
Yeah. I mean, as a brewer also know that if you do like the more, like the big beers, either strong beers or very hoppy beers, you have a lot of different kind of flavors in there, but they can also masquerade a lot of sort of, not defects, but things that you don't really want to have in the beer. If we go down to those simple beers with straight flavors and more simplistic flavors, you will notice immediately if you have a good or bad brewery behind it, because it will be much harder to masquerade any defects in these kind of beers. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. But also a question of character. because it's not necessarily hard to make a beer without any flaws in it, but it's also about character, having a flavor profile, a aroma profile, or a feeling, a soul in the beer that gives it character. And I think often that's the problem with lager, is that it may be, a lot of times you drink lager that's also bad, but you can also drink lager that's technically good, but it's just doesn't have character.
True.
Exactly. Yeah. True. So and normally, I mean, the character can be driven by different things for different people, but there's something that you feel when you taste it. And normally I try to fall back to that. Normally it's a good balancing between the ingredients that make you get that pleasure of the combined sensation. That means that there's nothing that really takes lead, but there's a good balance between all the ingredients, and that will create a much better flavor. And for example, in your beer here, what I think is interesting with this one is that it evolves a little bit over time as well. So there's nothing that really stands out, but during like the nose and the middle and the tail of it, you get different sensations of the ingredients, which I think is a fun beer to drink from that perspective, because it's engaged you a little bit during the sip. But on the other hand, it's also quite light drinkable. So it has high drinkability, which means that you would like to take another sip, not too far away from the first one, so to speak. So you want to sort of revisit this journey between the nose and the middle and the tail over and over again. And that's why I find it interesting with these kind of beers. And I think this one is a very good beer, because it will give you that journey through each sip, and you can actually feel the different flavors in the beer and the structure of the beer through that journey. I really like this one.
I think a really good quality about that we also try to have in our beers, or not all of them, but something I really like in certain beers is the fact that you can sort of zoom in on the beer and be part of that journey that you just described. But you can also not focus on the beer, and it just still goes down. Like it can both be front and center, but it can also just be part of whatever you're doing. If you're out with friends or at a concert or listening to a record or something like that, you can drink the beer and not think about it, and it's still just nice. And obviously that's not something to look for in every style of beer, because if you had to make a bourbon barrel aged stout that you can just drink and not really care about it, then I don't think you've made such a good that has to be a very imposing beer. But a pilsner should be able to also take the back seat, I think, and just be drunk in large amounts.
And I think that's quite interesting, as you said there. We discussed it in several episodes, like the beer, especially the classic beer styles that had a long like culture and heritage together with them. They are shaped based on the social community that they were sort of evolved through. And then the primary purpose of the beer was to get people together and have something to share when you sort of do social engagement. You discuss the day or meet with friends or whatever. And then the beer shouldn't be at center, because it's sort of a companion from that perspective, driving the discussion or being a starter or whatever.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't put you on center. But as you said, if you still been able to zoom in on such a beer and actually make it more interesting if you're interested to do so, then I think you have a really good quality classic beer, because it will be able to take like both places in that context.
Yeah, and I think you're hitting it right on the nail with this one, because when you explore some of these beer cultures, if you go to Bamberg to drink beer, obviously we come there as brewers and beer nerds, and we go to a place where we are absolutely losing our minds over how good a beer this is. And everyone else is in the room are just there on a Sunday having lunch and being out with friends, and the beer is nothing more than a companion to whatever else is going on. The same when you go to Belgium to drink a lambic at one of the old lambic cafes. You go there, you're crazy about lambic, and you see the bottle list and you flip out, and everyone else in the room have just been to church and just come over for a pint, and that's where they meet and gather. And the same you can say about a pub in England and stuff like, I mean, it's very rooted in the beer culture. And that's, I think, it's a very beautiful, beautiful thing about beer, is that it sort of connects people in a way that, that just works. And a very community driven thing. And that's also one of our ambitions, is to create more of a community where we are. Like, we'd love to do that, have a bar downtown where we can have people come together, or use our brewery more as a, have invite people in and have fun.
On that note, you also created a beer festival.
That's right. Yeah, we have a beer festival in Aalborg, which is we're located just outside of Aalborg.
Mm-hmm.
But Aalborg is like the big city that's close to us. And so it started out, actually, I had just opened the brewery and didn't have time or money to make a beer festival. But I got the idea that I should make a beer festival, and I couldn't say no to myself. So it was a really crazy thing to do. But I wanted to, there was a lot of people talking about how bad Danish beer was, and all the beer geeks were only drinking beers from outside of Denmark. And I was like, hell no, we have a lot of good breweries in Denmark. And I wanted to showcase that. So I invited, I think, 16, 17 breweries that I picked to a beer festival. That was back in 2019. And then it actually took 3 years after that. Yeah, so in 2022, we had the second edition, where it was also only Danish breweries. And then last year, in 2023, we sort of wanted to raise the bar and started inviting foreign breweries as well. So we had OO coming from Sweden, from Gothenburg, and we had some English and Dutch and Belgium and Czech breweries coming. And then next year, or this year, the next festival will be hosting. We have invited American breweries as well, and starting slowly to shift the balance. So it's going to be more international breweries than Danish breweries this year, just to try and raise the bar and bring some of not just some of Denmark's best beer, not just some of Europe's best beer, but actually some of the world's best beer and best breweries to our home city. It's a small festival. We have 400 people, 400 tickets for sale. So it's a nice intimate atmosphere, and all the breweries are coming with actual brewers or folks working for the breweries. So you have a really good opportunity to meet and talk with the people who actually make the beer. And a lot of the brewers also really love coming to a small beer festival. So that's actually some of the feedback we've gotten, is that a lot of the breweries who come to BSC Beer Fest say it's their favorite festival to go to, because it's not as big, it's not as busy, it's not as crowded as the others, but just a very chill atmosphere. And it's actually quite easy to go to Aalborg from Gothenburg.
Yeah. I was about to say that we already tried that route. It's pretty easy. So you take the ferry and then there's train pretty much from Fredrikshamn to Aalborg directly. So it's a simple trip. So when is it? Is it in the fall, like October?
It's in August.
August. Okay.
So this year it's going to be on the 16th, Friday the 16th, and Saturday the 17th of August. and 25 breweries. Most of them, some really, really great breweries from Europe and the UK, or Europe and US. And yeah, just good fun, drinking amazing beer.
So is it a like 2-day pass, or do you buy a ticket for each day?
You buy tickets for each day. So what one ticket is going to be 500 kroner Danish. I mean, it's a crazy thing having that festival. Mm-hmm. And every year I curse myself for arranging such a big event. But when the festival is there and everything is on and people are happy and there's loads of good beer, it's just totally worth it. Obviously, there's a lot of anxiety if anything should go wrong or if people are not going to be happy. But we've had happy guests and happy breweries and have had so much fun.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I read on my research that you've been, was it like 2022, the Brewery of the Year in Denmark?
Yeah. Yeah, that's so it was about a year ago that the Danish beer bloggers, they have this award where they invite bloggers and they invite breweries and bar owners and shop owners in the beer industry, so pretty much every people from within the industry to vote for the best brewery, the best beer release, the best artwork, a few different categories, and last year we won it, and that was obviously a very, very big thing. So when you have a brewery, I mean, you're working very hard, trying to make the best beer you can, and owning a business and it's not easy. I don't think anyone will say that. There's a lot of obstacles to overcome. There's a lot of there's a lot of grind. So whenever you get this feeling that people really appreciate what you do, and you get a feeling that what you do really resonates with people. That's something very special. So going down there and having a big fest and actually winning. So we both won the Brewery of the Year, which was like the main award, which was absolutely incredible. And there was also a vote for the best beer releases of 2022. Oh. And we actually managed to get third place for Slice of Sunshine, which I also sent you.
Yeah.
And then we got the first place for our bourbon barrel aged barley wine called Colossus. So, I mean, that was quite a wild day to get not just one but two very big awards, especially because, like, in Denmark, we really have not just one, not just two handfuls, but a lot of really good breweries that make incredible beer. So that was very special, and obviously it's also helped us a lot in terms of gaining traction and having more people be introduced to our beers. And so it was also a big push for us to receive this award, especially locally. So we're in the northern part of Denmark. I imagine you can, I don't know if northern Swedes, like way up in Lapland, are also like cheap and conservative, but they are probably, in Denmark.
Probably. We don't know. We shouldn't say anything about that. There are some fancy brewers up there as well.
So like most of the time Bad Seed has been a brewery in Aalborg. We've actually sent the beer out of the city. So it's been going to Copenhagen and Aarhus and Odense and everywhere in the country. But we've sold very little beer in Aalborg, our hometown. because, I mean, it was in a can and it was too expensive and it tasted funny and stuff like that. And but then when we got this award, we suddenly started seeing people from local bars and restaurants and stuff like that. They actually wanted to try us out, and and it's been like there's been this reoccurring thing where people are like, yeah, it is very expensive, but you know, we'll try it. We'll take one case of that and one case of that. And then the next week they call us and we're like, we don't know how, but we sold it all. So I mean, we need some more.
Yeah, that's great.
So that's quite funny.
It's the best feedback you can get.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
It's expensive, but it's still sold out.
Yeah, it's still sold out.
Yeah. And I mean, I think also, just it's a shift, obviously, for a lot of people that the beer can sometimes cost the same as a cheap or a mid-range bottle of wine.
Mm-hmm.
So people can be apprehensive about it. But if you make sure to brew beer that is good enough that people feel like the money was well spent, they'll probably buy it again. If they liked it, and that's, I think that that's one of our main missions, and like it's a sort of, it's something that we owe to everyone who buys a bad seed beer, is that they should feel that they got their money's worth. So we do our very best to make the beers as good as we can, and to never stop learning as well, and keep pushing.
Yeah, but I mean, it's fantastic to hear that you actually got traction based on the awards that actually raise awareness about people, and that you actually could sort of leverage those that attention that you got into real sales in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it keeps us going. Obviously, we love to brew beer, but if we can't sell it, we can't have a brewery. So...
It's true.
Obviously, that's the driving factor of having a brewery.
Yeah.
You can create a monastery instead.
Yeah.
Then you can still.
I mean,
you can still brew and pray. And,
yeah, exactly.
No, you can get some what it's called.
I'm a bit curious to try.
You want to try another beer, of course. You want to try another beer.
Another version of the Neupilsner, the New Zealand version. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the story about this beer is it's a part of it was the first beer in a series that we have, a continuous series that we make called Braufrisch, and Braufrisch is like a project where we engage beer bars all around Denmark to have beer delivered as fast as we can get it to them, and then they pour the beers on the day that they receive it. So a project where we try to get fresh lager beer out to the Danish people, pretty much. And the first beer we made in this series was Neu Zealand. And it's a spin-off of Neupilsner. So we use the same base recipe. However, we change one of the hops for New Zealand hops. So it's Nelson Sauvin, which is one of our favorite hops of all time, that we substituted. So in New Zealand, there's Tetnang. So we took out the Hallertau Middelfrü, and then we put in Nelson Sauvin instead. And the main difference about the two beers, apart from the one substituted hop, is that New Zealand has also been dry hopped. So usually we add around 30 to 40 kilos of dry hop in a in an IPA, and this one has 10 kilos of dry hop. So it's about a third or a fourth of the amount of hops that we use in an IPA. So it's not it's not nearly as much. But just to try and emphasize that rich, tangy, tropical fruitiness that Nelson Sauvin has, and put that slightly more forward than it would have been if we followed the traditional Neupilsner technique.
Yeah.
I mean, and now, sorry.
No, I think I was just talking about the cans, because you have a completely different graphic design on those cans on compared to the other ones. Of course, it's a little bit of the south of German, like
Yes,
Bayern
exactly.
design or
So
something. Yeah.
back when I started making Neupilsner, it was only available in kegs, but Neupilsner was part of the first beers that we put into cans, and that was actually through Canman, who a Swedish company who helps a
Yep.
lot of Swedish and also Danish breweries. So when I wrote my graphic designer, I talked to him, and I was researching like old German style beer labels, and found sort of some trademarks of that. So obviously the colors, mainly yellow and green, and then with details of red, that was something that you would see on a lot of German labels, and also like a lot of different types. So typographies, what do you call it? So you have this often like a Gothic type,
Yeah.
and also like capital letters and all kinds of different types of I guess you just call it types. And I sent my graphic designer these few like things that I thought we should focus on, and then he sent back this idea for a label. And I just loved it because it's like it has that truly German ambience. You can really see it. And it's also kitsch. So it's kind of funny as well that it looks so German. And what I also thought was kind of a, it started out as kind of a joke, but so the label says Bad Seed Brewing Neupilsner, like any other label. But a fun little detail is that above our brewery
Yeah.
name, it says Das Original.
That's original in German, yeah.
And I thought that was just really funny because it's not an original product. It's not the original. It was a new beer that nobody knew, and I thought it was just really funny calling it Das Original. And then we saw that it's just a joke that's been kept going for a lot of years. So we also made T-shirts.
Yeah, I say
I'm
that.
wearing
I see that.
one right now
That's
that says Das Original, and we have it on these gold printed glasses as well.
know.
So I mean, it's kind of just become a big inside joke is that it's the Das Original. And so this is this also became like the blueprint for all German style beers that we make. So we've done countless different styles, Vienna Lager, Kölsch, Maibock, Helles, Kellerbier, Rauchbier, Altbier, all types, and they all follow this graphic design, and we just switch up maybe some of the fonts. That's what it's that's the
Yeah,
word
font. Yeah,
font.
font is the word, yeah.
Yeah. We switch up some of the fonts and switch out the colors, and it just works very well, we think, for our German line of beers. And then we also have a very specific way of making our IPA labels. I think if you follow Handwerksbier on Instagram, there's probably going to be a few of those
It will.
to see, and they have sort of similar building blocks, I guess you can say. So it's like a colored background, and then a quite striking. It's often an animal motif made in a sort of old school tattoo style. So very different looking from our German style beers.
Yeah, totally different.
And all other beer styles are not set in stone. So we kind of play around with when we make a Berliner Weisse or a Witbier or a Stout, or they don't follow any blueprint. We just come up with something new
Yeah,
and
but
interesting.
you said you had one or two beers heading for Sweden. The Good Morning Vietnam, is that your most popular beer?
Yes, it's not our best selling beer, but it's one of our most well-known beers, at least it has been for a long time. I think beers like Neue Pilsner and Slice of Sunshine are becoming are more popular. But Good Morning Vietnam is, I mean, some people in Denmark call it a classic, classic Danish beer. I wouldn't necessarily say so myself, but it's been around for 8 years now, and we've like it has a lot of people really love it, and it was the beer. It was probably our breakthrough beer, if you can say so,
Oh, okay.
because back when I first made it, that was back when it was just me. When it came out, it got a really, really good reception. And actually came quite high on Ratebeer's list of so it's a milk stout with coffee, and back then it climbed up in the top 15 on Ratebeer for best milk stouts in the world.
Right.
So and it beat beers from Mikkeller and from Three Floyds and from like crazy beers from really, really well-renowned breweries that it just had a higher rating than those. So that's sort of a beer that we started to get some attention for, and people really, that beer got a following and sort of put us on the map in some sense. And then it actually took a while for me to start brewing it again when I switched from Phantom Brewing into brewing it on my own, because I really wanted to learn my brewing system, learn how to brew different styles. And so I think I went through 30 beers before I had sort of I dared to pick up some of my old recipes, and then we've been brewing it ever since. And it actually 2 years ago, no, a bit more than 1 year ago, it also got a bigger brother. So Good Morning Vietnam is like 8.3%, so it's strong stout, but it's not an imperial stout. And a lot of people have been asking for an imperial stout version of that beer. So we made that last year, me and Peter, and it's called Good Night Mekong, and it's a 12.5%
Ooh, that's a heavy.
imperial stout with lactose and Vietnamese coffee. And we actually have some barrels filled with that beer that's been aging for 1.5 years. So that's actually soon going to be released, maybe in the next half year. We're going to release that beer, or at least we're going to put it into cans and then wait for it to be ready.
Interesting.
But
So
yeah, Good
I'm
Morning
really
Vietnam is
curious
going to
here.
be in Systembolaget quite soon, I think in March.
Okay, so in March available here in Sweden. So what I'm a little curious about here is when you started out this beer, you ended up with Vietnamese coffee. Is there a reason for that, or just coincidence?
There's actually a very distinct reason. I was traveling with my wife in Vietnam, and we started or we tried Vietnamese iced coffee, which is one of the best drinks I've ever had. So it's this really bitter, dense espresso-like coffee. But they roast it in some sort of spice, maybe some cocoa or cinnamon or something like that. That makes it quite sweet also. So it's bitter and it's also sweet. And then it's served over ice with a bit of condensed milk. So it's this really, really rich, really, really strong, bitter, but also very sweet coffee drink. And it just tastes amazing. And the first thing I thought when I tried it was like, this should be in a beer. Like I have to create a beer that carries this flavor, because you have like the bitterness and like what the bitterness and the sweetness and the balance between those two things was very, very beautiful in that Vietnamese iced coffee. And trying to put that into a beer that was just like a obvious to me that it had to be done. So I went for, I think, a year or two trying to research a bit on how to mimic it and find a place to buy the coffee and sort of having this idea around how should I starting to get an idea about how I should make this beer. And then I brewed it and it was actually really close to that I was going to throw it out because I made a quite bitter base beer because the coffee itself is so bitter. Mm-hmm. So a lot of roasted malts, a really hefty hop bitterness as well. And the coffee is added after fermentation. And when I first tried the beer, when the fermentation was done, I was like super sad and really disappointed because it just tasted like a really, really hoppy stout, almost like a black IPA. And I was like, shit, this is just not going to be a good beer. But I decided to stick with my recipe and brew the damn coffee, put it in there and see what happened. And then when I came back the next day and those flavors were starting to come together, that was exactly how I wanted the beer to taste. So good morning, Vietnam, without the coffee, it's not a good beer. But as soon as you put in that coffee, it just blends together really, really well. I had obviously for some reason that recipe just worked. I didn't brew a trial batch or anything. I just made the recipe, brewed 1,000 liters, and crossed my fingers. Luckily, it became a very good beer.
Fascinating. So that was the first beer. So that one will be available here in Sweden in March, you said. So yeah. Keep eyes open for Good Morning Vietnam from Bad Seed Brewing. And then you had a second one coming in, or is it already available at Systembolaget?
It's available now. It's called A Slice of Sunshine. So it's one of our, it's actually the first modern West Coast IPA that we made. So it's a 7% clear, bitter, crispy IPA, hopped with Mosaic, Citra, and Nelson Sauvage. And it's been our best-selling IPA in Denmark ever since we put it out almost 2 years ago. It's a very defining beer for Bad Seed as well. It was like the first time we made an IPA that people got really, really excited about. And it was also an IPA that kind of inspired a lot of Danish breweries to make not just hazy IPAs, which is also something to be proud of when you can actually see that the products you're making are having an effect and are inspiring other people. And I think especially with Slice of Sunshine, that's something we see with that beer.
And you said here is a modern West Coast. So the modern part of it, is it because you're using like New Zealand based hops in it, or what would be the modern touch of a West Coast IPA? Because if you think about it, okay, West Coast IPA, at least from my perspective, sort of define the craft beer wave coming out from the 80s. And then of course, modern on that could mean a lot of things, but one thing could be that you alternated the hops because from my perspective, as I think you share as well, as I mean, West Coast IPAs should be more classical from that perspective. They should be like more like brownish in the color. They should be at least semi clear. They shouldn't be too sweet. There should be bitterness to it. There should be some piney to it. That's sort of my definition of a West Coast IPA.
Yeah. So the thing is, when we made Slice of Sunshine, like no one was making beers that they called modern West Coast IPAs. But we were, so it wasn't a thing. But we got some beers, me and Peter, from breweries like Slice Brewing and North Park and some new modern breweries in California. And they were making West Coast IPAs that were clear, that were bitter, but had a non-traditional West Coast flavor. Mm. So, as you said, a West Coast IPA, it's bitter, it's clear, and it's also brownish, amber colored. Because back then, mm-hmm. you had you whenever you were making an IPA, you would think we have to balance the bitterness with sweetness. So you would put in caramel malts, and they would also focus more on bitterness than aroma. So the thing that, like, the reason why we call it a modern West Coast IPA is that it's like the process is very inspired by the way we also make hazy IPAs in terms of hop varieties and like the amount of dry hop that goes into the beer to really push aromatics more than you would normally. And we also called it a modern West Coast IPA because it does taste different than a classic Stone IPA or Lagunitas or like a classic West Coast IPA. So we wanted to sort of also break people's expectations about the beer so that they wouldn't expect a West Coast IPA, but they would expect something slightly different. So that's why we came up with the phrase modern West Coast IPA. There may also have been other breweries that we didn't know about that have called it the same. But mainly it was because we wanted to sort of tell people that this is something different than the traditional West Coast IPA. And it was, I mean, for me and Peter, this was really when we tried those beers from Slice and North Park. It was like, this is the future. Like, we want to drink bitter IPAs again. We want to drink clear and crispy IPAs again. This is where we want to go with our hoppy beers. So, and again, it goes back to that, to like what we talked about with Neupilsner, is being rooted in tradition, but try and take it somewhere new. Mm-hmm. And that's what we also did with, or tried to do with the West Coast IPA, is to be very inspired by all the beers that we drink and highly respect, but also try to take it in a new direction. So that's also a beer that carries, I think, a lot of the Bad Seed soul in it. Like what Bad Seed is about is very well represented in that beer, just like I think it is with Neupilsner. It's a very different beer, but it has a few similarities. Like it's dry, it's a crispy, refreshing, and bitter. And you can say the same things about Neupilsner, they're different beer styles.
Yep. I'm definitely looking forward to try that out, but we will save it for
maybe the Friday beer.
The Friday beer, maybe.
Yeah, that sounds
next
good.
Week, probably. So then we will get a sort of a sensation of your description here,
yeah,
and see see how it matches up. But it's always exciting, as you said. I mean, it's a lot of beers. It's all about expectations. What you buy and what you expect to get. If you say West Coast IPA, at least for people like us that are a lot into beers, get expectations on how that should be, because you sort of sell it as a West Coast IPA, then it should be like a West Coast IPA, at least from our perspective. But as if you add more into it, then of course you change expectations and you get more curious, and then you get also more forgiving compared to like the traditional frames around what a West Coast IPA should be like. I think bad thing you can do is they call it West Coast IPA and it gets more like a New England IPA, and then you get sort of disappointed because that's what's not what you were expecting or buying. So I think it's good that you sort of use the expressions on the cans to clarify that you're experimenting a little bit with the classic styles.
Yeah, and also like there's also like people have been talking about a No Coast IPA, which has been sort of this mix between West Coast and New England style. And I mean, we could have just called it that. Some people may argue that we should have called it that, but for us, it's like why we chose to call it a modern West Coast IPA is also because, I mean, this beer is not supposed to be hazy or sweet or juicy. It's about it has to be like bitter and dry and really hop focused. Yeah, so basically our modern West Coast IPAs, we try to make them all about the hops. So there should be very little influence from malt or yeast or anything. And when you make New England IPAs, you use yeasts that are really flavorful. You use malts, like you use oat and you use wheat to help the palate and help the softness and the juiciness. So you kind of get help from both yeast and grain when you make New England IPA. Mm. But our modern West Coast IPAs are all about the hops. That should be like the only thing those beers are about. So that's also why, like, we didn't call it a no coast IPA. It's a West Coast. It's all about hops.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is good to take a stance. I mean, in Sweden, we have a term called mellanmjölk, which is
lagom.
I mean, in the middle, you can't decide if we want to go left or right. I mean, decide and then act. Right? It's better.
Exactly.
Okay, Fredrik, before we wrap up here and before we get this episode way too long, how does the future look for Bad Seed? I mean, I guess it's more or less the same like in Sweden. All the cost has gone up, of course, quite a lot. How do you manage and do you get some sales? And what can you say about the future?
Well, our main thing in the future is to keep on brewing beers that keeps on getting better. So that's what is driving the way we think about our brewery, is that if we make beers that are good enough and that people have good enough experiences with, mm-hmm. people are going to choose a Bad Seed beer. And we try to always try new things, evolve, learn, get better, practice, and being really, really product focused for us is our strategy of surviving in a beer industry that's really, really hard pressed at the moment. Mm-hmm. A lot of breweries are suffering. I mean, we've had a great year in 2023, and I think the reason for that is that people feel like they can buy our products and get their money's worth. And then they can kind of be part of a journey where things are not just always the same. I mean, you can buy a Neupilsner, that recipe doesn't change. And you can get that always. But we try to always strive for development and raising the bar of our quality, and just give people really great experiences with beer. So when we think about the future, we think of all the beers that we want to make and all the we have so many barrels in the brewery that are just waiting to get born, or the beers are waiting to come out, and we have some really nice stuff on the way there. And raising the bar also of our beer festival, trying to make that one of the festivals that hopefully also Swedish people will will see and think, okay, we have to go to Aalborg, just like they're going to Copenhagen for Mikkel Beer Celebration.
Yeah,
they also have to go to Aalborg for Bad Seed Beer Fest. And just trying to create good experience. I mean, running a brewery is all about making good experiences for your customers. Yeah. And as long as you can keep doing that, hopefully the customers will keep coming back. So I think that's our main mission, is to treat our customers with respect and like do a really hard work, very hard for their trust and just to make beers that are great. So that's more our focus than, it's not like we want to reach a certain amount of liters brewed or a certain amount of revenue or anything like that. And we want to be the, you know, we want us to be the product that sort of carries that defines where we can go. Yeah.
That sounds good for us as a customer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so.
And promising for the future.
Yeah, really promising.
I mean, everything is about, as you said, what's appreciated by customers is the quality of the product and a focus on quality on the product. If you have like spare coins to spend, then it's all worth to do it on quality products.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. And I think that's also one of the reasons that we've been keeping, like, we've been growing as a brewery, also through very difficult times the last 4 years, even. And I think that's because of this focus that we've had, and obviously we're going to keep on track with that, because we owe it to everyone who pays 50 or 55 or 60 kroner for a beer. Like, they really have to get a good beer if they pay that much for a beer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our job, is to just make sure that every can of Bad Sea beer is as good as it can get.
And if you want to like experience Bad Seed beers at its best, you had a tap room close to the brewery, or is it in Aalborg Centrum? Or?
No, we actually don't. We dream about opening one at some point.
Okay.
We do get some beers into Sweden through High Hops Distribution. So they get into Systembolaget, and we've also been selling kegs so to bars across Sweden.
Mm.
For example, at Akurat. You've been able to get our beers and some other places. It's not a lot that we've sold, obviously. It's also very expensive to import Danish beer in Sweden, because the Danish krone is much more expensive now than it was just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's very limited how much beer we have in Sweden, but we hope it can sort of grow a bit. We were just at All In Beer Fest this November. Met some people there, met you, Victor. We have some beers in Systembolaget, and hopefully we can gather some interest in Sweden, maybe also through this podcast, and maybe someday there'll be a demand for more in Sweden.
Do you think, nowadays we can have like a US or American beer in Sweden at Systembolaget for 100, 125 Swedish crowns? I mean, that's quite a lot. But do you think the people are willing to pay more, like, for the foreign beer from the US than Danish beers in Sweden?
I would imagine. I mean, at least it's like that in Denmark. So people expect to pay a lot of money for imports, and they expect Danish beer to be. Like a Danish double IPA shouldn't cost the same as a double IPA from Trek or from Fidens or at a US brewery or something like that. I'm guessing it would be the same in Denmark. I think with our barrel aged beers, which you've also gotten one of those cans, I think we actually managed to make some quality that's. That if you had to buy something that tastes like it, you'd have to spend a lot more money. So, for example, the King Ink that I sent you, or our bourbon barrel-aged barley wine. Obviously, they're expensive beers. They're maybe like 110 Swedish krona for a can. But if we have to buy a beer from an American brewery that tastes like that, at least here in Denmark, the price would be double.
Oh, okay.
I think we, even though it's expensive beers, we managed to put a lot of value into it, and maybe that could. We've been trying to actually get a hold of the people at Ölstudion in Gothenburg, because they have more freedom to get whatever they want. We're going to try and see if we can send them some of our barrel aged beers to hopefully see. If they can sell in Sweden as well.
Yeah, we hope so. I guess they will There's been some rumors about an Öl studio in Stockholm or maybe Malmö as well, because it's been like a trial or a test in Gothenburg.
Yeah.
And so, but I'm not 100% sure yet. But hopefully we'll see it.
I go there every time I'm in Gothenburg. It's a great place.
Yeah, and if I'm super excited now on trying out like the best bad seed beers in the world on tap. Where should I go?
Yeah.
I can take the train, I can take the plane, whatever. I just want to try it. Can I go to your place or where should I go?
No, we don't have that much keg sales in Aalborg, so it would actually be to go to Copenhagen to do a pub crawl in Copenhagen, and you'll find it in a lot of bars there, fresh. Or it could be to follow Braufrisch, our fresh beer project. I actually just brewed the next version. I brewed that last week, and that's going to be released in late February or in March, which is like a Bamberg inspired lager beer. So that's the best way to experience bad seed is to drink Braufrisch if you are in a bar.
That's great. That's great. I think we have to end this now. Very kind of you to participate in the podcast. Super excited.
I'm glad you would have me.
Super nice to hear your fascinating story. It really is.
Very good. And we're super excited to try out more of your beers going forward.
Definitely. I hope you like them.
We do. At least these two were great.
I mean, it was a good start. So,
thanks, man.
So thank you, Fredrik, for your time, and see you later.
Take care. Yeah, thanks for having me. I want you to